Next on our agenda, item F, I see Mary Roberts already at the table, along with Mr. Evan Garber. Thank you. Welcome, Office of the General Counsel. This is an action item. Judicial Branch Administration, Judicial Branch Contracting Manual.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice, members of the Council, Jody and Kurt. Exactly 13 months ago to this day, the legislature enacted the California Judicial Branch Contract Law. Since that date, we have been before you. Now, this will be the third time to address one of the requirements of the law, which is that the council adopt and publish a judicial branch contracting manual that all of the covered judicial branch entities, those being the council, the AOC, all of the courts at the trial and appellate levels, and the Habeas Corpus Resource Center follow. So what we're going to do today, as soon as we get this PowerPoint up and working, is to quickly run through what we'll cover. Next slide, please. We're going to recap the prior judicial council action with regard to the judicial branch contracting manual and the direction that staff was given, then explain the significant revisions and rationale for those revisions that are before you today for adoption, and then the recommendation, which is to adopt those revisions, and then direct staff to return in the future, a date certain, with any additional proposed revisions. I think by just virtue of the number of times we've been before you, you can get a sense of the momentous change wrought by the California Judicial Branch contract law on how the judicial branch entities must go about their contracting and procurement business. The new law establishes a new part to the public contract code that requires judicial branch entities to comply with the public contract code provisions that are applicable to state agencies and departments with regard to procurement of goods and services, including IT goods and services, with one significant exception, and that would be trial court construction. Prior council action, the first action was in August of 2011, where the council adopted the manual to take effect on October 1, 2011, which was the operative date of the new substantive requirements of the law. We put that manual in place very quickly with the assistance of a working group comprising members, representatives of the trial courts, the appellate courts, and the HCRC. We knew at the time we did it that this was the first version would have to be revised, but the alternative of not having in place a manual as of October 1 would have been that all of the judicial branch entities would have been subject to the state administrative manual and the state contracting manual. That would not have been a good thing. The council directed staff to report back in December with further proposed revisions. We did that. We were back here on December 13th at the business meeting, proposed for adoption revisions to the introduction chapter of the manual with regard to use of language, words signifying mandatory and discretionary actions, because that particular part of the manual had proven to be, just in the first couple months of use, very problematic. With ongoing efforts in working with the working group, the council was presented with some significant revisions. Those were adopted, and we were directed to come back in April with comprehensive proposed revisions to the manual. AOC team, led by Evan and his group of transactional attorneys, worked very closely with the expanded working group to further revise the manual almost in total. I say almost in total. There's one chapter that we simply could not tackle, and that's Chapter 6, Leveraged Procurements. We will address that later. We came up with comprehensive revisions that went out for public comment in February and March of this year. And in the public comment materials, we asked specific questions. We asked, is the information in the manual presented in a clear and understandable way? Would the content work from a court operations perspective? Is the information and the requirements and the suggestions, is all of that stuff user-friendly, and would it work for all courts irrespective of their size? And are there any material omissions in the manual? The comments received were significant. All of the comments came from the trial courts, and they were fairly negative in their response to what we had revised. The comments in summary form are as follows, that the proposed revisions were more onerous than the version of the manual that the council had initially adopted, and that in part came from our attempt, which turned out not to be a good idea, to overlay requirements from the trial court financial policies and procedures manual onto the judicial branch contracting manual. Another significant area of concern expressed by the courts in the comments were that the content of the manual seemed to erode local court control in a manner that was not necessary nor appropriate, and that we had taken too literal a view of the requirement that the provisions in the manual be, quote, substantially similar to provisions in the state administrative manual and the state contracting manual. The court's pointing out, appropriately so, that substantially similar doesn't mean the same. And that the suggestion made by many of the commenting courts that we ought to distill to basic objectives what SAM, the state administrative manual, the state contracting manual are attempting to accomplish, but not specific provisions incorporating those into the judicial branch contracting manual. We took those comments to heart and worked very hard on further revisions to the manual. And looking at the introduction as the very first place where not just those who must follow the manual, but those who will audit courts and other entities for their compliance with the law would look, that would be the introduction. We rewrote significantly language in the introduction to emphasize that the manual is intended to support and promote the legislative intent underlying the public contract code, one of the legislative intents, which is to promote efficiency in contracting activities, while still providing for robust competition in procurement and contracting in the public sector. We also focused in the introduction on putting new language that recognized for the trial courts the decentralized management of the trial courts and the significant role and responsibility of presiding judges and court executive officers with regard to procurement and contracting. That's new language in the introduction of the manual. The introduction also acknowledges one of the things that made it so difficult for us in creating the Judicial Branch Contracting Manual and trying to honor the legislative requirement to have provisions substantially similar to the State Administrative Manual and the State Contracting Manual is that those two documents are developed and applied for the executive branch entities that have DGS playing a major role and having a tremendous amount of authority to waive any of the requirements in those manuals, and how that structure is simply not applicable to the judicial branch, if for no other reason, and there are other reasons, that the public contract code at section 19207 specifically says that the DGS does not play a role with regard to judicial branch contracting. So what we undid in our new version that is before you is to make sure that that what may sound like requirements in the state administrative manual and the state contracting manual, all of which can be waived by DGS, don't become requirements on the judicial branch entities without any waiving capability. Instead, what we did, well, before I go on to that, the second bullet point there observes that the state administrative manual and the state contracting manual and the policies and processes found in those documents have been found by others who have critiqued those materials, including other government bodies, as being outdated, ineffective, and costly. And again, it did not seem appropriate to take all of that and import it onto the judicial branch, especially given the explicit legislative intent that public contract law should be efficient and the product of the best of modern practice and research. So it just seemed like we needed to have a very clear change in direction, and that is what's reflected in the revised manual that's before you. Where the public contract code has requirements all of those requirements are maintained. Where the state administrative manual or the state contracting manual addresses issues and has the concepts that are at the heart of the provisions in those manuals have been distilled so that we can implement the essential objectives and legislative intent without tying the hands of the courts and other judicial branch entities unnecessarily with specific requirements that are not based in statute. A key provision in the revised introduction is before you. I want you to, as a flavor of how we've reshaped the manual, the paragraph from the manual that we've extracted reads as follows. Under the decentralized management system of the judicial branch, the purchasing authority of a superior court is vested in the presiding judge. To meet the unique needs of the court and ultimately achieve the goals set forth in Public Contract Code 100-102, which are the legislative intent sections, each presiding judge has the authority to vary the court's application of any non-mandatory business or accounting practice set forth in this manual. That provision acknowledges that the presiding judge has the authority to vary the terms of non-mandatory requirements in the manual. The introduction goes further and recommends that if a presiding judge of a court does so, that change should be reflected in the court's local contracting manual. Other revisions include removing various constraints on negotiations that were in the draft that went out for public comment, having a higher threshold for use of RFQs, requests for qualifications or requests for quotes, removing lower thresholds for RFQs for IT services, providing more flexibility for advance payments, but with very clear guidance in that regard, and removing a number of things that had been proposed as musts, meaning mandatory, where they were not grounded in a statutory requirement. The involvement of the working group, which was expanded. Originally, I think we had 11 trial court reps, and it grew to, on paper, about 20, and then continuing with our appellate court representative and HCRC. The working group wholeheartedly concurred with our what was referred to as a better focused approach as reflected in the revised introduction and then throughout the other chapters of the manual. We reviewed with the Court Executives Advisory Committee and the Council of Court Executives the new approach at their April 5th meeting. We suggested at that time that SEAC consider having a standing working group to deal with judicial branch contract law implementation issues because this is a new area of activity that will affect the courts, you know, until the law is changed, if ever. And there are a number of issues that will continue to arise, not just with regard to the manual, although there will no doubt be future need to review and revise the manual as law evolves and as experience is gained. But there are also other issues related to the implementation of the law, including the upcoming audits by the Bureau of State Audits, including continuing to develop the tools to assist courts in implementing the various requirements of the law. And so that suggestion is being considered by SEAC at this time. The recommendations that we have before you today are two, that the proposed revisions to the Judicial Branch Contract Manual be adopted effective today, and secondly, that you direct AOC to report back to the Council in August about further revisions to the Judicial Branch Contract Manual with regard to, for example, Chapter 6, which we did not, just could not get to it in time for today's meeting. We have a proposed timeline for the activities from today forward. We would put out or recommending that we put out for public comment the revisions that the Council, if the Council adopts the revised manual today, to put those out for public comment along with any Chapter 6 revisions because the version that is before you now is so substantively different from what was out for public comment in February and March. We thought it would be a good idea to put that out and get it, and have it have broad readership, and then come back in August with proposed revisions to Chapter 6, and if there are any other necessary or desired revisions to the other chapters, to have that also come back in August, and if appropriate to have that on the consent agenda, unless there's some specific reason why it needs to be on the discussion agenda. So that is our presentation with the specific recommendations and the timeline.
Thank you, Mary. Justice Hull.
Thank you, Chief. Ms. Roberts, the last portion or towards the last portion of your presentation, I especially appreciated the point made about giving authority to the local courts through their PJs to, this is not a term of art, but to adjust certain requirements of the manual that were considered non-mandatory. We all know, all of us on the council, and a lot of us, most of us in the branch know, that one of the handful of really critical issues facing the council and the branch and the AOC now is the proper balance between AOC centralized and council centralized requirements, which have their benefits in an appropriate case, and local autonomy, so that the local courts, the 58 superior courts, can serve their communities in the best way possible according to their community's needs. And I particularly was taken with that, and I just wanted to say that I personally think that's certainly a step in a very good direction. Thank you.
Thank you.
Kim Turner.
Thank you, Chief. First of all, I want to wholeheartedly endorse this new approach. I think it's brilliant. I think it's needed, and I think that the courts will feel the relief immediately if we pass this today. But I have one lingering concern, and that is presumably the BSA has not seen the draft revisions to the Judicial Branch Contracting Manual yet, although they will certainly be able to see them when it goes out for public comment. Do you have any concern that the BSA, which will be the organization auditing all of these courts, will take a different view of what the legislative intent was and will, I mean, I know that you're trying to sort of tee it up in the introduction,
right,
but is there a concern that they won't see it the way we see it?
And
we will end up, with a really hypercritical Bureau of State Audit's report on our program right out of the gate?
Let me answer this in a roundabout way at first, going back to the initial version of the manual that we had out for public comment last summer. We had some discussion with BSA about whether they had any interest in being involved in the development of the manual. It wasn't put to them quite like that. And the answer was basically no, get it done and then they'll essentially audit to it. Now, that having been said, who knows in terms of what they will do when the audits begin. But under the statute, what BSA is supposed to do is not audit the manual per se. They're supposed to audit the implementation of the law. That's kind of a, writ large. It's hard to predict, to be candid, but I think the approach that's reflected in the revised manual is a sound and reasonable approach that does have basis in not just the specific language of the California Judicial Branch contract law, but in the very first provisions of the public contract code where the legislative intent is articulated. The intent is to have the robust competition, and the manual does that because, in part, the PCC has requirements with regard to competition that are there, even though they are onerous. Courts won't like it. It's a new way of doing business, but we did not vary the statutory requirements. So I think we're good on that point. But then the other stated objective is efficiency. And so unless the BSA takes a view that that somehow we're not being efficient and that somehow with this approach that the principles of competitive bidding are somehow being disregarded or that somehow it's an open door to favoritism for some potential vendors or others, I don't think that the BSA should have a reasoned basis for disagreeing with this approach.
Thank you.
Baxter? Yes, I commend you on the proposed changes and I move approval.
Thank you. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second by Justice Miller. Any further comment regarding this recommendation? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Motion carries as to items 1 and 2. Thank you. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Evan.